Thanks for the invitation. I heard people remark on the Department of Mathematical Physics, probably the only department in the world left that has mathematical physics in the title, but not for much longer. It's just going to be Department of Physics as of next year. So actually, it's going to be the School of Chemistry and Physics. So. Yes. So I'd like to talk a bit about T-duality and topology change. Now, the topic of T-duality is, of course, a very old topic, so maybe I have to justify why I revisit this this issue. Well, I've been looking into classifying D-brain charges, at least the mathematical aspects of that, for quite a while, and we went into things like twisted K-theory, which is not something I want to discuss in too much detail today. But we started wondering whether there exist isomorphisms between twisted K-theories. And we knew that T-duality gave an isomorphism between ordinary K-theory. So we were thinking of generalizing that to isomorphisms of twisted K-theory, so which would correspond to strings in a background H-flux. We soon realized that in the background of H-flux, T-duality actually changes the topology of the manifold. And I guess there were some earlier investigations already on this topic. I guess the earliest was a paper by Alvarez-Gomez and some students. But I think it's fair to say that the issue was rather confusing. Some of the results in their paper were wrong. So that's basically why we revisit this issue. But our main motivation was establish isomorphisms of twisted K theory. And in particular, we were interested in D-brains on group manifolds. So which can be described as a group manifold can be described as a torus bundle over a flat manifold. So T is the maximal torus of some Lie group G. And we were attempting to compute the twisted K theories of Lie group manifolds. So we were wondering whether maybe we could achieve something by establishing a whole web of T-dualities for these torus bundles. I should talk faster. Okay. So I won't be discussing that today. Let me say what I'll be discussing today. Today's talk, sorry if I'm on your way, I have to push the button here all the time. But I noticed you can see it on the web afterwards. So. Okay, the talk today is based on a paper in collaboration with Meta Farges in Adelaide and Jara Evslin, who's now at PISA. This is the main paper. We put a little summary paper on the web just last week because a lot of people asked us, what is the real content of your paper? It's too mathematical, we don't understand it. And a paper in preparation where we extend the work in the first paper to torus bundles with collaboration with Keith Hannibus from Oxford University. So I didn't quite know which audience to address, so I'll give you a brief, very embarrassing summary of what T-duality is. I'll talk a bit about the Boucher rules. Then I will discuss some global issues. The Boucher rules are basically T-duality on the low energy fields in the string theory, but in a local fashion. So then I will discuss some global issues, give some examples, and then I will discuss some details of the proof of the global T-duality rules that I will give in section 3. And then I'll briefly discuss some generalizations to torus bundles. Okay, so what is T-duality? Again, I apologize, this is really a very primitive, brief description. When you do closed string theory on a manifold M cross a circle, you find an interesting phenomenon. So if you describe your closed string by a map from the string world sheet for the closed string, a cylinder to this space-time, if you quantize that string, you find that besides the momentum modes, which are quantized, as you have for ordinary particles on a compact manifold, I'll just discuss the direction of S1 here. The string can, of course, wind around the compact direction. So in addition to momentum modes, there are winding modes, which are given by the fact that the string field can be, has to be identified periodic up to, well, up to winding around the circle. I forget about all the factors of 2 pi and alpha prime, etc. So if you look at the spectrum of this closed string on M cross S1, you find, besides oscillator modes which don't involve R, you find the spectrum of energy states is has this following structure. So obviously the spectrum has a nice symmetry. It's invariant under the transformation R goes to 1 over R. And you can look at the other properties of string theory, and you'll find actually that the whole string theory doesn't make any distinction between propagating on the manifold M cross S1 or M cross the dual S1, where the dual S1 is the circle of radius 1 over R. Of course, if you go to fermionic strings, the story gets a bit more complicated. You get dualities between different superstring theories. In particular, you get a duality between type 2a and type 2b. Now, this was a particular case of a circle, of a globally defined circle. But it turns out there's many generalizations of this particular phenomena. Basically, the circle doesn't have to be globally defined. You can do T duality on things which are locally the product of a manifold with a circle, and of course it can be generalized to higher dimensional tori as well. And I haven't discussed anything about background H flux here. T duality can also be generalized in the background of H flux. Now, people are very interested in even other generalizations. I'll be discussing specifically the case where I discuss circle bundles or torus bundles, but in the context of mirror symmetry, as first argued by Stromach and Yao and Zaslav, the case of vibrations where the circle or the torus might degenerate at certain points is also very interesting, probably more interesting in the case of bundles, but this, as far as I know, hasn't been established in the background of H flux. The mathematics, even without H flux, gets quite complicated. I think the most recent up-to-date results are in a paper by Donaghy and Pantev, if you're interested. Although we're interested in this, we don't have anything new to say about this particular case. We found that even the case of just bundles, so which have circles which don't degenerate, wasn't well understood, and we hope that by solving this particular case first, we had an insight into how to attack the more general case. Okay, so while T duality is a symmetry of the string theory, if you go to the low energy effective field theory, T duality does something non-trivial on your massless fields, and those transformation rules are known as the Boucher rules, which have been known since the 80s. Let me briefly summarize the Boucher rules. So again, I'm looking at a bosonic string theory, which has massless fields G, B, and phi. G, the metric field, B, the anti-symmetric tensor fields, whose curvature is what I call H flux, and phi, a Dilaton field. In the case of superstring theories, there are other P-form gauge fields, Ramon-Ramon fields, which also transform under the T-duality. And the transformation rules can be obtained from a low-energy effective action by a sort of standard prescription. And to just basically summarize that description, well, you have to choose specific coordinates to make this work nicely. If your space-time E has an S1 isometry, you can choose coordinates such that the killing vector, you can choose a coordinate x such that the killing vector corresponding to that isometry is just given by EDX. And you can choose your metric and H, well, free-form H in such a way that they're invariant under the killing vector. So this is the Lie derivative with respect to the killing vector. Now, for physicists, it's very natural if you see an isometry to try to gauge it. So this was done first by Boucher, but I think the description in the paper by Rojek and Verlinde is the one that is sort of most used. So you gauge it by introducing a U1 gauge field and an auxiliary coordinate in such a way that if you solve the if you solve A from the equations of motion of the auxiliary coordinate, you get back the original action. And if you do it the opposite, if you integrate out A, you get a dual action with T dual fields given by what are known as the Boucher rules. So here's a summary of the Boucher rules. As I said, first derived by Boucher, re-derived by many people. So they look pretty complicated. I guess if you write them in terms of the dimensional reduction language, they look a bit simpler. But note in particular that the metric components, well, the first one is just the generalization of R goes to 1 over R. X is the is the coordinate in the circle direction. And the other, well, the components here basically of G and B are totally mixed in the T-dual. But these are just local rules. This doesn't say anything about how the topology changes. There are also transformation rules in Ramon-Ramon fields, which I won't list in detail here. I'll give you a very summarizing formula later, which was first written down by Horry, I think. I have to apologize. There's many people who worked on T-duality. If I don't reference anyone, then again, I apologize for that. I think the full rules on the Ramon-Ramon fields were first written down in a paper by Bersouf and collaborators. Okay, but the interesting question is what happens globally? And as I said, there's this, well, there are many papers on that, but I think the initial investigation was by Alvarez and collaborators, who did notice that there was some topology change, but some of the examples they give are actually wrong. But okay. So what is the result of our investigation? So the context in which I'm working is principal circle bundles. So I'm not looking at circles which can degenerate. I'm looking at circle bundles which, in addition, have a circle action, which is free, so no fixed points. So M here is just the orbit space of the S1 action on E. And, well, given such a principal circle bundle, well, they're classified by elements of the second integer cohomology group of M, of the base space, despite its, by their first Turing class. So I'm looking at such principal circle bundles with a certain three form on the bundle space. I claim its T-dual is, again, a principal circle bundle, so which I will denote by hats here. This is a good projector. When I showed this slide yesterday, I couldn't actually see the hats, so I had to read out everything. okay, where so I have to tell you how E hat and the dual flux H hat are found. Well, they're given by the following formula. Let me write it on the blackboard here. Somewhere else. So the first Turing class of the original bundle and the three form H are related to the Turing class of the dual bundle and the dual H by this formula. And so pi star is the push forward of the integer cohomology at order k to the k minus first integer cohomology of the base manifold. If you want to think of forms, I often don't really distinguish between forms or integer cohomology in my talk. I mean, it should be clear in which context I'm talking. In terms of forms, this is just the push forward is just integration over the fiber. So in this sense, these Turing classes and H fluxes are T-dual. As I said, T-duality is supposed to be a symmetry of the string theory. In particular, it should also relate not just the spectrum of the closed string, it should also relate other objects in one string theory to its t-dual. So in particular, it should relate d-brains in the theory, so it should give rise to an isomorphism of the twisted k-theories of E and its dual. So as I said, that's what was our main motivation, to find these isomorphisms. Now again, I don't really want to talk about twisted k-theory, it would be too technical, I think. Twisted k-theory is very closely related to twisted cohomology, just by a twisted version of the Turing character. So I'll talk about this twisted cohomology in somewhat more detail. And if you know about k-theory, it shouldn't be too hard to translate the whole picture in terms of k-theory. Okay, so I have to talk about twisted cohomology for a bit. Okay, so what is twisted cohomology? Well, if you have, say, in the form language, if omega k of m is forms on m, k forms on m, you can construct a complex by summing all the even forms and all the odd forms, which are denoted by omega 0 bar and omega 1 bar, and a differential constructed out of this three-form H in the following way. So the twisted differential is just the ordinary differential, the Riemann differential, minus the wedge product with H. Or in integer cohomology, would just be the check differential and the cup product. So this differential is actually squares to zero and acts between the even and odd forms. So this is a Z2 graded complex, and the cohomology of this complex is what is known as the twisted cohomology. So this is just I bar is I mod 2. So this is just a Z2 graded cohomology, as is K theory. Now, the way I've described it, everything depends on the specific representatives H that you choose of the choose for the 3 class. Of course, the cohomology depends only on the class, not on the representative, and you can easily construct that isomorphism. It will come up later, so that's why I do it rather explicitly. If you have another H prime which is in the same cohomology class, or which differs from H by an exact form, then the differentials are just related by the following construction. So you see that if I just get an isomorphism between the cohomologies by multiplying cohomology states by this prefactor e in the power minus omega. So that shows that there exists an explicit isomorphism between twisted cohomologies if H and H prime are cohomologous. But of course, the explicit elements in such a cohomology group depends on the chosen H.
Are you assuming H is closed?
Yes, sorry. Yes. H wasn't just a form, it was actually an element of the cohomology. The fact that it's closed ensures that this actually squares to zero. Okay, so this is the basic picture which we have. This t-duality, according to one of the previous slides, between E, H, and E hat, H hat, provides an isomorphism between the twisted cohomology of E and E hat, except that you have to shift the degree by 1. For an n torus, you would shift the degree by n. And as I said, there's also an analogous isomorphism between twisted K theories, and it all fits nicely in terms of a commutative diagram where these CH of H are what's known as the twisted Turing characters. Again, I don't want to really talk about twisted K theory, just mention that result here.
Are you assuming the fibers don't degenerate?
Yes. I won't say anything about the case where the fiber degenerates. I really don't know a full result there. I agree that's a very interesting case. So to get a bit of feeling for this isomorphism, I've done about the simplest example I could think of. I mean, this is a bit of a talk for a mixed audience. I realize that some of the things which I say are completely trivial, but I hope the other part of the audience will appreciate that. But okay, the case of trivial circle bundles with h equals zero is quite easy to understand. In that case, I'm not talking about twisted cohomology. I'm talking about ordinary cohomology, and the ordinary cohomology of such a direct product is easy to compute by the Kunneth formula. The cohomology ring is just isomorphic to the product of the cohomology rings of M and S1. And S1, we know, S1 just has generators in degree 0 and 1. So the degree N cohomology of the circle bundle, trivial circle bundle, is just isomorphic to the M minus first plus the Nth cohomology of M, as well as for its dual. So this is a two-graded cohomology, which is really non-twisted here. In both degrees, it's isomorphic to, well, as you can see, just the cohomology ring of M. So my isomorphism between the between the twisted cohomologies of E and E hat just has to interchange these two, and these are obviously isomorphic. So you can write on the interchange explicitly. So Tiedewald has to provide me an isomorphism, I said, between the twisted cohomologies, or in this case, ordinary cohomologies, except for a shift of degree by one. And of course, you can explicitly write this isomorphism in terms of the generators dx and dx hat of the first cohomologies of the circle, just by omega mapping to, well, increasing by degree one, just by wedging with dx hat, and a form of this type on the left-hand side goes to omega. Okay, so let me write down this formula in a more abstract way and interpret it. If I want to write down a single formula for this transformation rule, what you'll have to do is to make sense of these forms on a space which incorporates both x and x hat. And that's what's known in mathematical terms as a correspondence space. So I'm going to write down the forms on I'm going to pull them back to a bigger space, where both dx and dx hat make sense. So that's a space m cross s1 cross s1 hat. As I said, it's known as a correspondence space. In this case, it's a trivial correspondence space. And both m cross s1 and m cross s1 hat are, of course, embedded in that space. And these are the obvious projections. So I'm pulling back forms here and forms here to the correspondence space. In that case, I can compare them. And I can write down a very nice formula for this transformation rule. So G here is a general cohomology element. The dual is just given by integrating over the S1 fiber of a product of 1 plus dx, which dx hat, times this form. You can show it produces the formulas in terms of omega. And I can write this a bit differently, since this is just a two-dimensional space. It's the same as the exponent of dx, which dx hat. So it's e in the power some particular 2 form times g integrated over the S1 fiber. Now, mathematicians will certainly recognize this particular 2 form. This particular 2 form is actually the curvature of a canonical line bundle over S1 cross S1 hat. It's called the Poincaré line bundle, and e in the power f is just the Chern character of that line bundle. So the previous formula sort of has a nice interpretation. You just think of all these forms as living on the correspondence space. You multiply a particular form with the Chern character of the Poincaré line bundle, integrate over the fiber to get a form over here, and that's what's called the T-dual. So for those of you who want to translate this in cohomology, in K-theory, it's sort of obvious what you have to do. You take a particular vector bundle, you pull it back to the correspondence space, you tensor it with the Poincaré line bundle, and push it forward, and that's your T-dual. So that gives you explicit map between the K-theory of M cross S and the K-theory of M cross S1 hat. Okay, so this was a very simple example, but I hope it illustrates the origin of the formula which incorporates the transformation of the Ramon-Ramon field that's written down first by Horry. Horry had a slight generalization. He looked at, not at h equals zero, but he looked at exact forms, h and h hat. So h is db and h hat is db hat. But they're both, I mean, both globally. So still trivial h flux, but with a non-trivial b field.
Does every circle bundle have a correspondence space? Let's say a smooth manifold.
Does every circle, every pair of circle bundles, you mean? Yeah.
Well,
yes. Yes. I will write on the correspondence space for non-trivial circle bundles later.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So this correspondence space is just a mathematical technique of dealing with of relating forms on different manifolds. You just pull them back first to the correspondence space and then push them forward. So in the case of still trivial fluxes, but non-trivial B fields, the formula can be slightly generalized. And in that case, the interpretation of the formula is really an isomorphism between twisted cohomologies. Because due to a formula which I wrote down earlier, well, this is just H is cohomologous to the zero plus an exact form. So you just apply the formula I wrote down earlier. So if you multiply G by E in the power minus B, as I've done here, and then take the Durand differential, that's exactly the same as the twisted differential on G. So if G is DH closed, its dual will be DH hat closed. So indeed, this formula provides you an isomorphism. Well, I haven't shown it's an isomorphism, but for the inverse, you can write on pretty much the same formula between the twisted cohomologies. Okay, so how do I generalize this story to S1 bundles? Well, there's a couple of problems. Well, there's one particular problem, which is that for non-trivial S1 bundles, neither the Poincaré bundle nor B and B hat are globally defined. They're only locally defined. So this previous formula which I wrote down just doesn't make sense, because none of these things are well defined globally. It turns out, though, just run ahead of the story, that the combination is globally defined, even on non-trivial circle bundles. Also, I have to explain to you in some convincing way how to get this dual from the original bundle. So I have to explain these particular transformation formulas. But before I do that, I'd like to discuss some famous examples to give you a feeling. Okay, so the first example is an example that's been discussed by many people. It originates in what is called the Shirok-Schwarz compactification of string theory on M cross T3. It's also known as a twisted torus, and most recently it has been discussed in papers by Guriri et al. And Kachru et al. But as I said, there's many more people involved. It also appears in papers by Duff and collaborators, Pope and collaborators. So I'm not able to list all the people that worked on this. I'm just giving this example because probably many people here are familiar with it. So this is a nice example. You can just write down an explicit metric in coordinates and an explicit H field, and you can just T-dualize using the Boucher rules. So this is a torus, except for that it's slightly twisted. So it's a three-dimensional manifold, and it has, of course, integer three cohomology. So H here is just k times the generator of that three cohomology. And these coordinates have to be interpreted as, well, being on a torus, except for the fact that, well, so Y and Z just behave as if they're circles, but of course X has to behave slightly differently, has to be slightly twisted, because this particular expression is not invariant. When X goes to X plus 1, you have to slightly change Z as well. So there's two ways you can interpret this manifold. And I'm discussing this particular example because it shows that in the case of torus bundles, of high-dimensional torus bundles, there are some complications in T-dualizing. You can view it as a T2 bundle over S1, as a twisted torus. So a torus bundle over S1, where S1 is the x direction and the other two are the tori directions. But you can also view it as an S1 bundle over T2, where the S1 direction is the z direction. And, well, this particular interpretation fits into the theorem I discussed earlier. This one doesn't, but you might think you can just dualize in this two torus by dualizing in the independent circles. Actually, people have tried to do that, and they find problems with that. People have various interpretations of that. My interpretation would be there's really an obstruction of doing that particular T-dualizing in the two torus bundle. And the reason is that this two torus bundle is actually not a principal torus bundle. It's sort of a mathematical complication. S1 bundles are always principal S1 bundles, but torus bundles are not always principal torus bundles. They don't always have a torus action. And really, for T-duality, you need this torus action. It's basically saying that there are conserved quantities hanging around, conserved momenta. So this particular interpretation is really different than falls out of the machinery which I'm discussing here. Okay, so let me discuss the second interpretation. So you can just go through the Boucher rules. Well, this one is a principal S1 bundle over the torus. You can explicitly construct a connection of that bundle. This is a globally defined one form on the bundle. It has a curvature which lives on the base space. It's J times the generator of the cohomology, second cohomology of the base space. So it is a principal circle bundle with first Turing class J, which have, well, F is the curvature, the first Turing class is J, and as I said, the H is K times the generator, so it has H plus K. So according to my formulas, which are sort of on the blackboard, on the T-duality, these two have to be interchanged. And indeed, going through the Boucher rules, the rules which I had on one of my first transparencies, if you perform those rules with a specific choice of B field, so B field is really only defined locally because X is not defined globally, you find precisely the same expressions except that J and K are interchanged. So this is an example of something where you locally apply the Boucher rules, but globally the topology of your manifold really changes. It changes its Turing class. Now for future reference, let me just compute the wedge product of these connection forms A and A hat. I remind you what A was. A was the connection one form which gives rise to the curvature. And there's a similar expression for A hat. If you just go through this computation, miraculously what you find is that combination is precisely the combination which appears in the Hori formula for the transformation of the Ramon Ramon fields. The left-hand side is, of course, globally defined. A and A hat are both globally defined one forms. I really should interpret this formula on a proper correspondence space, but I'll come back to that later. Okay, the other example, if I'm going too fast, please interrupt me. The other example which has appeared in the literature in various disguises is the Lent space. So the Lent space, well, basically it's the analog of the previous example, except where I replaced the two torus by a two-sphere. So the Lent space is a line bundle over the two-sphere of Turing character P, and it can be described as the three-sphere mod ZP action. And ZP acts on the three-sphere as if the three sphere is embedded in complex two space, and then it just multiplies by a phase factor. So this is an analog of, well, particular case of this would be just P equals one, where it's just the three sphere, which is a line bundle over the two sphere, which is known as the Hopf vibration. Circle bundle over. Yeah. So this is isn't as one bundle over the two sphere. If you interpret two sphere as CP1, just by sending the pair z1 z2 to the homogeneous coordinates of CP1, and it's not hard to show that this is actually a line bundle of Chern character P. Okay. Also, this, since it's again a three-dimensional manifold, oriented three-dimensional manifold, its third cohomology is just Z, so the H flux is measured in terms of integers. And if I take, if I look at this Lens space and I put a H flux of k units times the fundamental H flux on it, you should see this duality between the H flux and the Chern character. So you should see a duality between P and K. And in this case, the integer cohomology is sort of trivial. It's just torsion. So I just give you the result for the K theory, the twisted K theory. That's not too hard to compute for three-dimensional manifolds. It's just given in degree 0 by ZP and degree 1 by ZK. And indeed, the T duality precisely interchanges. ZP and ZK precisely interchanges I equals 0 and I equals 1, and at the same time interchanging P and K. This example has been discussed in a physical context, I think in a paper by Molitzena, Moore, and Zyberg. I want to spend some time on the proof, because that'll probably give some hints on how to generalize this proof to more complicated cases, also cases where the circle might degenerate. So basically trying to compare cohomologies of circle bundles. So if you have any bundle, you can relate the cohomology of the bundle space with the cohomologies of the base space and the fiber through a spectral sequence. Now in general that gets very complicated, but for sphere bundles the spectral sequence collapses and the whole spectral sequence can be summarized in terms of a long exact sequence between cohomologies. So this is known as the Giesen sequence. So the Giesen sequence, it maps the kth cohomology of M of the base space to the kth cohomology of the bundle space just by pulling back. So think in terms of forms, just pulling back forms. Then you map it to the K-minus first cohomology of the base space by the push-forward map, just integration of a fiber. And you can map this one to the K-plus first cohomology of M by cupping or wedging, if you want, in terms of forms with the curvature of this line bundle. So you can show this is an exact sequence. And this is precisely sort of the sort of thing we're looking for, because if I specialize this to k equals 3, we have an H flux which is living here, and we have line bundles which are classified by this group. Sorry, circle bundles are equivalent to line bundles which are classified by this group. So there's some relation here between fluxes and bundles. So the procedure now is just to take an H flux here, push it forward, so integrate it over the fiber. You get some two form, some closed two form, which I call F hat. So a closed two form on the of degree 2. Sorry, closed two form on the base space M is what I wanted to say, which satisfies the property that if you do this map twice, that you so that the wedge product between F and F hat equals 0. So again, since the second cohomology classifies circle bundles, this F hat is the curvature on some circle bundle, so let me call that circle bundle E hat. So it's defined by the fact that this first Chern class should be F hat. And I can now, so I've already constructed an E hat, I have to construct an H hat, so I just reason the whole way, think backwards by looking at the Giesen sequence for this bundle E hat. So reasoning backwards, this formula is precisely symmetric. So if you know that the cup product with F hat equals 0, it has to come from somewhere up here because it's an exact sequence. So there exists an H hat in the circle homology of E hat such that F is equal to the push forward of H hat. So these are precisely the formulas which I've written down here. Okay, but there's some ambiguity in this whole formalism. Of course, H hat is, even in cohomology, is not completely determined. H hat is determined up to an element of, well, of the previous term in the spectral sequence, in the long S hat sequence. Okay, so how do you fix that ambiguity? So, I mean, there's sort of T-dual manifolds, T-dual fluxes for any choice of H hat, but we're interested in those cases which give rise to isomorphisms in twisted K theory. So we're interested in something more special than just mapping E and H to another E hat and H hat. And of course, if the whole thing has to correspond to T-duality, we know that if the original H, say, is only living on the base manifold, then H hat should be exactly the same. The T-duality shouldn't influence those parts of H which are just living on the base. So that's the way we fix this ambiguity. We require that, say, the lag of the part of the flux which is living totally on the base manifold of E is the same for H and H hat. But in order to do that, we have to compare H and H hat, and they live on different spaces. H lives on E, H hat lives on E hat. So again, we have to do that by comparing the two on a bigger space, and this is the correspondence space in this case. Well, it's easily constructed. It's just a fibered product of E and E hat. So this is just the pairs of X and X hat in the Cartesian product, which project to the same element on the base. This is pretty standard construction, but obviously this is the right space to compare things on E and E hat. You want to identify those parts which are in M. So you want to think of E and E hat as only differing on the fiber. So this fits nicely into a picture. E and E hat were circle bundles over M. The correspondence space is actually also a circle bundle over E and E hat. And actually, this is a commutative diagram. This projection map can also be seen as just a projection of E hat onto its base, so as pi hat, because the fibered product of E with M over M is obviously isomorphic to E. So this map is just, in essence, this projection map. So this circle bundle has the same Chern class as this one here. So it's a nice commuting picture. So how is this ambiguity fixed? Well, we choose connection one forms on both E and E hat, giving rise to the curvatures F and F hat. I should maybe remind you that F and F hat are forms on M, but if you pull those back to E, they are globally exact, and that's exactly what is called in mathematical terms a connection on the bundle. So these, I'm using some freedom in notation. I never really write down that I pull back forms to the appropriate space in which they make sense, so I hope this is all understood, but if I write on all the pullbacks, then the formulas get really messy, and I think writing it this way is just more illuminating. So actually, I did write a pullback here, but okay. And you have to normalize them in a certain way. You have to normalize them such that the integration over the fibers of A and A hat are equal to 1. So I claim you can always write A in terms of A and A hat up to a 3 form which is living on the base space. So I pull it back here to the bundle space, but so this is obviously living on the bundle. This is just living on the base. And the way you prove that is just going through the same long exact sequence, the Giesen sequence, in somewhat more detail. You just identify. You really look at the level of forms themselves, not just cohomology classes. Now, given the fact that you know this, you can just define H hat to be, well, something which is very close to this, but sort of a T-dual expression, and has the same 3 form on the base. So these forms really differ only on the fiber. And you can easily show that they satisfy the relations that they should satisfy because of, well, A, this normalization, and B, the fact that, well, for instance, this one, if you integrate over the fiber of a form which is already on the base, then you obviously get zero. Or in terms of long exact sequences, the pi star, pi upper star is just zero because of the exactness of the sequence. Okay, similarly for H hat. So these are explicit representatives in cohomology which satisfy the requirement of t-duality, that t-duality doesn't affect the part of the form that lives on the base space. Okay, we're almost done. So I have to write an analog of the Hoare formula. I claim if you introduce a two-form which is globally defined on the correspondence space, just A wedge A hat, as I had for the nil manifold case, if you compute its exterior derivative, well, you obviously find the following expression, and this is just the difference between H and H hat and H. So this is a form, remember, which intertwines between the twisted cohomology of H hat and H. And that's precisely what you need to write down the analog of the Hoare formula. So the formula, which makes globally sense now, is just multiplying by e in the power this particular globally defined two-form in the correspondence space, integrate over the fiber, and again, as I said, this you can show that locally this just reproduces the Hoare formula, and you can also show that it's actually an isomorphism. The inverse transformation is just basically the same thing. Okay, this is basically what I said already. It intertwines between the twisted cohomology of G of H and H hat because the exterior derivative of B is precisely H hat minus H. And locally you can describe these connection one forms in the following way, and if you then compute their exterior products, you find precisely the expression that you're familiar with. Okay, so I hope this sort of illustrates where t-duality comes from in the mathematical setting. The upshot is really trying to relate a three-form to a bundle, and that's precisely the relation you get in this Giesen sequence. So, to generalize this, you want to generalize Giesen sequences. Now, as I said, in general for a bundle, there exists a Lorentz spectral sequence which computes the cohomology of the bundle space. Only in the case of sphere bundles, it leads to a nice nice long exact sequence. For torus bundles, it doesn't. So that's the first sort of problem if you want to generalize this whole scenario to torus bundles. And the next problem is that, as I've discussed in this nil manifold example, there could be certain obstructions to t-dualizing over just any torus bundle. So what we found is that we could make it work in the case of principal torus bundles, so torus bundles with a torus action. This is not to say that you can't t-dualize other torus bundles, just that it falls without the context of what I'm discussing here. I would be tempted to say that if you can do it, then the t-dual of a torus bundle is no longer a torus bundle, but I really don't have any results in that direction. So let me say it carefully. In the context of the machinery that I'm discussing, you can't t-dualize torus bundles which are not principal torus bundles. Okay, so to generalize it, let T be our torus, so n Cartesian products of the sphere, of the circle, sorry. Look at this Lie algebra, which is just Rn. It then turns out that even in this particular setting, we can't t-dualize just anything. It turns out there's a specific class of H fluxes which can be t-dualized, and they're somewhat more restrictive. They're not just given by an element in third cohomology, but you need an additional one form with values in the Lie algebra of the torus. So in terms of components, this is just Rn, it's just, well, in components, these are just n U1 gauge fields. And what you need is, they need to satisfy certain conditions. H needs to be a closed three form. If you contract H with a killing vector, so I've sort of compressed my notation here. So XI is both the Lie algebra element as well as the left invariant vector field. If you contract H with the left invariant vector field, so this is the analog of integrating over the fiber, it should actually not be a form on E, which a priori it would be. It should actually be a two-form on M, and it should be closed. Given locally by a connection, by this connection, one form A. And furthermore, this A should satisfy sort of analog of the normalization conditions which I had before. If you contract A with the left invariant vector field XI, you should get delta IJ. Now, if you work with such type of fluxes, which is not the most general H flux, you can't always find an A hat which satisfies these conditions. But for this subset, you can find a Giesen sequence, and the Giesen sequence just looks completely similar to the Giesen sequence for the circle. So you can just go through this whole machinery, which I explained in some detail before, and you can find a dual torus bundle and a dual H flux. And you can find an analog of the Hori formula, which is just has a similar expression, except that you have to sum over these U1 gauge fields. I call this A hat because it's precisely the A hat which occurred in my formulas before. If you remember the formulas for the circle bundle, actually was constructing such an A hat. For a circle bundle, such an A hat always exists that satisfies these conditions. For a torus, it's a more stringent condition. Okay, so that's basically the upshot of the talk. These last results will be published in the paper with Matthew Varghese and Keith Hannibus. The upshot is, even for torus bundles, provided you restrict your set of torus bundles to principal torus bundles and your set of fluxes to what I call T-dualizable fluxes, you can go through exactly the same procedure and find a T-dual. And that's where I want to finish.